Save big money on your outdoor project at Menards. Take the guesswork out of landscaping with our free, easy-to-use design program. Plus, Menards has the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape blocks at the best prices. Get started on your dream landscape now. Visit us in-store or on Menards.com to see our full selection of landscape blocks and get your project started today. Save big money
at Menards. At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live and in charge in hour number two right here on the early line. It's Davis Maddock. It's Donnie Wrightside. And yes, Super Bowl 58 was played on Sunday live from Las Vegas. The boys were out there all week long setting it up. But there's a lot of fallout from the Super Bowl. We spent a lot of time talking the game ad nauseum, and rightfully so, because it was interesting all the way through in an overtime game that had coaching decisions that we're going to be taking a look at, player decisions that we've been taking a look at, but also from a side of the Kansas City Chiefs and what this means for the future. But before we get into that, Davis, being out in Las Vegas, we've always known for decades, Las Vegas is a great party destination, and we've always had that thought process behind the scenes going, man, if they ever get professional sports and legalized gambling comes across the United States where they're allowed to host events, it's the perfect city. Everything located on the Strip, thousands of hotel rooms, unbelievable accommodations, fantastic dinners, convention halls all the way up and down, a stadium right behind the Strip. It was the perfect outcome for a Super Bowl, and I think Las Vegas did itself certainly with a pat on the back, and notoriously here, you could get me to argue, Davis, I love the rotations, right, of the Super Bowl. When we'd be like, okay, you got an L.A. Super Bowl, you got a Miami Super Bowl. Now, granted, there's still a lot of cities for me that don't actually deserve Super Bowls that somehow get it because the public funding comes in, a la me being an Eagles fan. We had a Super Bowl in Jacksonville. You got to be kidding me. And then the Super Bowl that the Eagles won over the Patriots was minus 35 degrees in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So those are always some things that come to mind. But Las Vegas absolutely nailed it here. As we welcome in the radio audience, you're watching and listening live to the early line. It's Davis and Donnie talking from Super Bowl action. But Davis, just give me your thoughts here. Las Vegas as a whole for a Super Bowl, in that rotation, much, much more what? Every 3 years we should have it out there now, it feels like.
I mean, I could be convinced that you just do the Super Bowl in Vegas every year, honestly.
Yes.
Like it is. The way Las Vegas is set up, is it's set up for something like that. It's set up for big events. It's set up for people, you know, millions and millions of people to come from out of town, stay there. I mean, my personal feelings as a 31-year-old married man who doesn't drink, to me, Vegas, I max 72 hours for me. I cannot be there for a week. I'm also not a table game guy. I'll do it, but I prefer to play poker. So my experiences in Vegas are I go out there for something, for whatever, a fantasy sports thing, and everyone else is playing blackjack and craps and roulette. And, you know, I'm sitting there playing 2-5 no limit for like 10 hours, and then I meet up with everyone else later. Like, it's a different experience for me personally than most other people. But I have done Vegas 48 hours twice, 72 hours once. And at the end of the 72-hour trip, I'm getting on my red eye on Sunday morning, and I'm like, literally never again. 72 hours, absolute maximum. But the thing is, though, I like when they get a little bit creative. Like, they did a Super Bowl in Minnesota. I thought that was cool. It's also good for the cities, like, when it happens. You know, it gets a bunch of people to come. They redid it, the entire Twin Cities airport, for the Super Bowl. Like, it ends up being a positive thing for the community. I don't know if Jacksonville needs a Super Bowl, but like, I personally, like, I would love to see a cold weather Super Bowl again. It'll probably, like, literally will probably never happen. But I do kind of like the idea of, like, imagine a Super Bowl at Soldier Field. Like, just imagine a Super Bowl at Soldier Field. I mean, it would be terrible. The field would be in awful condition. Someone would wrench their knee on the soupy field. But yep. I do, like, the NFL is too big business now for that to ever happen. But, like, you know, 30, 40 years ago, we could have gotten away with stuff like this.
No, we certainly could have. It's all about the money here. But Vegas did put on a very good show next year in New Orleans. And certainly New Orleans is no stranger to hosting Super Bowls. And away we go into the future. But that future is probably going to look a lot with Kansas City in it, Patrick Mahomes, and also Andy Reid. If we take a look since 2018 here, Davis, lost in the AFC Championship game. Then the next year won the Super Bowl. The following year lost the Super Bowl. The following year lost the AFC Championship game, followed by back-to-back wins in the Super Bowl in 2022 and 2023. Patrick Mahomes now right in the middle of his prime, still in his 20s. The future, Davis, is what for those Kansas City Chiefs?
Well, hopefully it is they find themselves in a conversation for one of these free agent wide receivers, T. Higgins, Mike Evans. Right. I mean, honestly, even Gabe Davis, I think transitioning from the Bills to the Chiefs would be enough. I mean, Gabe Davis is just like a souped up version of Marquez Valdez-Scantling. DeAndre Hopkins, you know, I mean, Hopkins is the interesting one because his contract he signed with the Titans is actually not that big. He and Marquez Valdez-Scantling cost the same against the cap in 2023, which, you know, kind of, I mean, in the end, it doesn't matter because the Chiefs got to where they needed to go. But in the regular, you know, that 62 yard in the second half loss against the Raiders, I'm like, man, DeAndre Hopkins would be pretty freaking good on this team. So that's the first step. They also, you know, they got the 32nd pick in the draft. They should, you know, both of those Texas wide receivers, Xavier Worthy and Adonai Mitchell, are both going to be available for them to select there. I think it's just a super deep wide receiver class. So that's the first thing they got to do. I think they know they got away with one playing Marquez Valdez-Scantling and Sky Moore and Mecole Hardman, you know, all these snaps in the playoffs. Like, they know that they need to improve. And Kelce, right? Kelce is, people thought he was going to retire this year. You know, how much longer can, like, he continue to be as effective as he was in the playoffs? He's going to be 35 years old next season. They're going to have to figure some things out on offense. It's the same way that every great team in the NFL has had to figure things out. Like, remember, like, instead of just going immediately to the Patriots, maybe take a look at, like, the Packers. So the Packers basically had, not only do they have these great quarterbacks, but they also were always finding great wide receivers. They, you know, to Jordy Nelson to Davante Adams. You go way back even further than that. Donald Driver, James Jones, like, they had a lot of really good wide receivers. And when the wide receiver quality went down, what happened to Rodgers? He had 2017, 2018, 2019, Rodgers was not as nearly as effective as a player. So that is like one, two, and three things they need to handle this offseason.
Let me ask you this question. We know how good the Kansas City Chiefs are, and Patrick Mahomes right in the middle of his prime right now. Three Super Bowl victories already. If I put the number out there at 5.5 for Super Bowl wins for Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs, where does your bet go on that?
If I get guaranteed full seasons, Pat never tears a knee, never ruptures his Achilles or whatever, I get, you know, 10, 12 more seasons of him, I'm going over. He gets three more, assuming health over that time frame. I think maybe hot take, maybe not. I don't know, but I'm not betting against this guy ever.
This is going to be a tremendous debate because the one thing we don't really get this that much in baseball, but in the NBA, it's either you're a Jordan guy or LeBron guy. What do titles matter? How long did they play? And the statistics all go into it. This is going to be an unbelievable debate when it's all said and done, because in my lifetime growing up, I never thought anybody would approach anything near what Tom Brady did with the New England Patriots here. And here comes Patrick Mahomes in his late 20s right now with three Super Bowl championships, a few MVPs, a few Super Bowl MVPs, and away we go. This is going to be an awesome conversation to be had. But you know where we're going next? Walk a little golf. Keith Stewart joins the show next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You know, we're rolling through hour number two, talking some NFL action. We'll get to some NBA stuff and also college basketball in hour number three. I'm Donnie Wrightside. He's Davis Matic. And we're going to welcome into the show now Keith Stewart, our resident PGA Tour specialist. and we're ready to have some fun and get after it. Good morning this morning, Keith. Hey, by the way, has the weather been better out there? What's going on?
Well, I'm glad we made the move to L.A. there, guys. Good morning. It's 6 a.m., so Pacific time, and I'm happy to be with you all and happy to see the sun. I haven't seen it in 2 weeks. I've been out here. Pebble was like a hurricane. Scottsdale, you guys were there in Vegas. It was freezing and raining. I mean, it rains. It's cold in the desert. What are we doing? So thankfully, L.A., palm trees, sunny when I landed yesterday. I can't wait to see a little Tiger Woods this week.
That's great stuff, because we're going to talk Tiger Woods in just a moment here. But for the PGA Tour, we usually get the build-ups, Keith, right? We're waiting for the Masters. We're waiting for the U.S. Open, the British Open, all that good stuff in the PGA. But one of the biggest tournaments here, from a fan perspective, is the Waste Management Phoenix Open. We had boots on the ground out there with you, Keith, here. Just give us a sense, because we watch through social media. We've always known it is a massive party. But is the party too massive now for the PGA Tour?
Well, I tell you, it was too massive for the Thunderbirds there on Saturday. They had gate concession problems. They just kept letting people in, the volunteers checking people in. They couldn't check the tickets, so they said, hey, come on in. Donnie, come on in. Davis, everybody, come on in. They don't post the numbers anymore because they get so big. The record used to be 250,000. There was probably, they estimate, in the ballpark of 400,000 partiers in there on Saturday. I was walking around. I don't need social media. I don't need X or Instagram. I saw these folks sliding and drinking down, you know, sliding down hills and drinking and down. I'm inside the ropes. I'm down there in the bottom of the arena. You know, they say, oh, there's like 20,000 people in there. They stopped checking tickets and bracelets to get into there. It felt like there was 50,000 people in there. The place was absolutely insane. And all of what you saw on, you know, social media is usually a little bit exaggerated or hyperbole. I'm telling you, there were times where it definitely wasn't safe.
Yeah, one of my buddies was there, and he was like, by the weekend, it wasn't even fun anymore, right? Because everything had gotten so out of control that actually on Saturday and Sunday, it just wasn't even fun anymore. It was just like, awesome. We overpaid for this Airbnb to go into this golf tournament that just turned into a very regular golf tournament on the weekend. But let's turn our attention to the Genesis Invitational. It's played at the Riviera Country Club. I would say one of the relatively marquee events on tour, you know, not a major championship, not a TPC event, but one of the absolute best. Scottie Scheffler finally gained some strokes putting last week before he ended up putting one off the green. He is the heavy, heavy favorite here. We have Rory McIlroy. We have Victor Hovland here. How are you seeing things, Keith, atop the board for the Genesis Invitational?
Well, I'll tell you, it's interesting. I followed Scheffler on Sunday, and you know, I'm trying to figure out what this guy's identity is. He takes the lead on Sunday morning on the front nine, and then when he has the golf tournament in his grasp, all of a sudden the putter just goes completely like insanely cold. And it's almost, you could just see the nerves, the way his body language, the way he's walking around the green. He's got 20 feet for eagle on 13, and he three putts for par. The next hole, he needs to get up and down. He needs a 4-foot putt. Doesn't hit the hole. The next hole is a par 5. Another scoring opportunity. He's got a putt inside 5 feet for birdie. He doesn't. I mean, folks, we got Tiger Woods coming back this week. In his prime, he was a killer. If you're a number one golfer in the world, I just don't see him being a killer. And I think that's kind of the theme at the top of the board. When we started the week, there were 8 guys that were under 20-1 odds to win this tournament. I think the books feel the same way that I do. They're not quite sure who wants to take, you know, the role of the guy this year in 2024. You know, could any of those guys win this golf tournament this week? Sure, they could. You know, Cantley's at home. Rory's very good, you know, has had a good start to his season. But, like, I just don't see that killer mentality. And I think that's a big reason why we've had 6 straight weeks in a row where these long shot bombs at over 100-1 keep winning on the PGA Tour. If you're hot, ride that putter, go nuclear, and take this thing deep, and you could win on the PGA Tour right now. And the guys at the bottom of the board, they sense blood at the top.
Keith, the thing I love having you on here is to talk about these golf courses, because again, it's not like an NFL stadium. Like, oh yeah, it's 100 yards long and, you know, 50 yard lines right here. They had to have some intricacies on these holes. But if we take a look at the Genesis Invitational, the one guy that's not going to be able to defend his championship is Jon Rahm in this tournament. Obviously not playing defective over to the LIV Golf Tournament. But the one thing I always enjoy here about Riviera is the 18th hole coming in. It's one of the best camera holes on TV, the way you finish with that monster bowl and thousands of people crowding around the 18th green. But talk to us about this golf course and how it's going to play this week.
Well, they've had a ton of rain here. The rain that was with me in San Francisco at Pebble Beach has moved its way down the coast. We saw it out in the desert too, but they've gotten 8 to 10 inches of rain here in the Los Angeles region. So Riviera sits, you know, you talk about that amphitheater, that's at the top of the hill. You play down in the Santa Monica, you know, valley kind of between the hills here. And the golf course itself doesn't have a ton of elevation changes. And at the bottom there, it's soft. I was there late yesterday afternoon walking around. It's not as soft as Pebble and where Waste Management got to, but it is definitely soft. This golf course is going to play a little bit on the longer side, which is going to make it play a little bit easier for these guys. I know that sounds kind of like an oxymoron, but the softer it is, the easier it is for them to stop the ball in and around the greens here. The greens are some of the hardest to hit on tour, as well as the fairways themselves. We're looking for really, really strong ball strikers this week. Par 71, we're only going to get 3 par 5s and 11 par 4s. So par 4 scoring is definitely something that I'm targeting as well. It's going to be a major indicator towards success. The guys over the last 10 years that have won here have gained over 8 strokes on the field on those par 4s en route to winning. And another kind of fun thing about Riviera, it's probably the best non-major championship golf course that they play year after year. This is the 60th edition of the LA Open here at Riviera. So I love this comp. The guys that play well here tend to play well at Augusta. This is a really good precursor for that. Look at the winners we have. Adam Scott, Green Jacket winner. Bubba, he's won here 3 times in the last 10 years. Green Jacket winner. Phil, you know, so over the years, this is actually a really good indicator of who's got their game in a good place for Augusta National. And if you're looking for history, guys that were great at Augusta are guys that are definitely going to be all over my card this year.
All right, well, speaking of guys who are very good at Augusta, we do have the return of one Mr. Tiger Woods to the PGA Tour this week. He will be teeing it off 170-1 to win this golf tournament. I guess the books are maybe not that worried about people piling in on that ticket. 25-1 for a T5, 10-1 for a T10, plus 360 for a T20. What are we thinking? Do we think he's going to be able to grind out a cut here, Keith?
Well, the books definitely think so. You got to lay a bunch of money. I think he's minus 190 in order to make the cut, plus 140 in order to not make the cut. You know, Tiger is the healthiest he's been since February 23rd, 2021, when he had that fateful car accident. It's just a field of 71 guys. The top 50 in ties or anyone within 10 strokes of the lead, which could be the whole field, quite frankly, makes the cut here. It's a limited field event. It's a cash grab. So I definitely like his chances, and I think that affects his odds to make the cut. I also like his chances at that, you know, close to 2-1 number in order to get in the top 30. But past that, I think it's really tough on a golf course that he hasn't had a top 10 since 2004. To pick Tiger to do much better than anything than that.
It'll be interesting to watch him play it out. And also, as we know from the past, sometimes with those injuries coming back for him, maybe he plays well early in the tournament and might be able to fade just a little bit later. But it's great to see Tiger Woods back on the golf course this weekend. Certainly ratings will be there live from Los Angeles, a historic golf course. And also, as we sit around lying in wait, we're not far away. We're middle of the February month here. We're going to have March and then early April, we're going to get to the Masters. It's great to have the attention here with Keith Stewart to go over all these options. Keith, thanks again for joining us this morning.
Guys, it's great to be with you on the early line. Have a great day.
Fantastic. Thanks for checking in here. Our resident PGA Tour expert, Keith Stewart, here helping us out from Riviera this weekend in the Genesis Invitational. But we got to get back to the sports landscape, which, yeah, includes more and more football. It's Davis and Don in the morning right here on the early line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Right back at it here on the early line on a Tuesday morning. It's Davis and Donnie. And, you know, even though we're getting updates from the PGA Tour, Keith's checking in with us, having some fun there. JY is going to be up next to talk a little NBA action. But it always seems like, Davis, it's going to be football season. And when one page turns, you start to get on the next one and say, oh, look at that. 2024 NFL season right around the corner. So let's have some fun and take a look at the teams moving forward next year. Because as we said, it's never too early to look. Now, once again, the 49ers, we know, have an unbelievably talented roster here. You're still getting away cheap on a quarterback that's making under $1 million a year. Do we think the San Francisco 49ers will be good again next year? Absolutely. How about those Kansas City Chiefs? Oh, look, Patrick Mahomes is going to come back, and Andy Reid, and you know Travis Kelce out there saying, oh, should I retire? Not going, hey, man, a three-peat would be fantastic. You know he's coming back as well. And I'm looking forward to the addition of a true number one wide receiver on the Kansas City Chiefs to help that offense get even more explosive next year. But if we're looking at some of the numbers and the tickets to win the Super Bowl next season, it's the usual suspects here, Davis, that are listed at the top. The San Francisco 49ers at a 5-1 price. The Kansas City Chiefs at a plus 650. The Ravens at a 9-1 price. The Lions and the Bills both at 12-1. How are we approaching the offseason? And before we get into the teams themselves, just give me a look at that top five, top six there. Is it right? Did the odds makers get the board right to start the 2024 betting options?
No, I don't think they did. I think the Bills should probably be flip-flopped with the Ravens. The Lions are also too high for me. Like, you know, there's one thing between saying also, like, the ordering of these is roughly correct and saying these are good enough spots that I would like to place a $100 wager and then let that money sit for 363 days. You know, I don't know if any of these odds are quite that good. Now, obviously, these odds are going to move based on what happens in free agency and the NFL draft, if one of these teams unexpectedly has a great free agency, or, you know, if one of these teams at the top of the board says, you know what, this will be the year. This will be the year that we cash in, that we mortgage the future, you know, because people say this all the time, Donnie, oh, the NFL salary cap is not real. I mean, the NFL salary cap is very real. Look at the New Orleans Saints, who did this deal with Derek Carr, and they would love to get, trust me, they would love to have anyone other than Derek Carr be their quarterback, but there's no way for them to negotiate what's happening with their salary cap. Like, if they tried to move on from that contract, they would be like $47 million in the hole against the salary cap. But maybe the Detroit Lions say, you know what, this is going to be the year, and we're going to punt off all this money to another year. Maybe the Bengals, who are in a very, very precarious cap situation with Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and T. Higgins. Burrow already has his contract, and T. Higgins is the big one that they have to decide on. Maybe the Bengals kind of go all in on this season. It's totally possible. I think we could see them jump up in the odds. And I'll tell you the team that is too low. They don't even make the graphic here. The Green Bay Packers with Jordan Love, they have one of the best cap situations in the NFL right now. We were talking about this on the show yesterday. Their oldest wide receiver is Christian Watson at 24. None of their pass catchers, no one who caught a pass last year from Jordan Love, makes more than a second round rookie salary. Like, they are in a really good spot heading into free agency this offseason. I think they're going to be one of the more improved teams next year in the NFL.
And I think you're right about that, too, because the one thing that we never saw all that much under Aaron Rodgers. Now, granted, when you're drafting players like Davante Adams, you have to go out and spend on the wide receiver position. It'll be interesting if they upgrade the tight end position and also go after a wide receiver, because if Aaron Jones, who had a very productive late season last year, in that playoff run, if he can be that same type of run and stay healthy, that's certainly going to help them out as well. But if we run that first graphic back up here, Davis, and take a look at the top shelf teams, right? And if we exclude, let's just say, take out the 49ers, Chiefs, Ravens, and Lions as that sort of final four. We take a look at the Bills, Bengals, Cowboys, Eagles, Dolphins, and Texans. Who of that second top tier do you think can do some damage? Because I know you said the Cincinnati Bengals, if they add, but I do believe they're going to lose T. Higgins, and then Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson they're going to be in that battle for, I'm going to break the bank here and make just about as much as a quarterback as it turns out. The Cowboys are an interesting option for me, but it's always Dak and the Cowboys, so much talent, they just can't get over the hump. And I don't even mean Super Bowl, Davis. I mean just getting to an NFC championship game. The Eagles are interesting, but sort of on that back burner for me. But talk to me about teams like the Dolphins and the Texans, because the Texans, for me, were really a great surprise. They have a chance to improve themselves in the offseason, but they're certainly going to be a target on their back because nobody is going to play the Texans and go, ah, look at this rookie quarterback at this point. That's not going to be the case. But also, square focus here, right? What is up with the Dolphins, and what do they do in the offseason this year?
You know, I don't really know what they do because they are one of those teams who also did make a ton of acquisitions on defense. I think they will probably try and be in the market for a top tight end. Maybe that means trading up in the draft. Maybe they end up being the team that takes Jatavion Sanders from the University of Texas. But that was kind of one of the missing ingredients of their offense was, you know, they're playing Durham Smythe and Julian Hill, the undrafted free agent at tight end in these big spots. And honestly, a third wide receiver, I think, could act. It feels crazy for a team that has Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle to say the issue might be a third wide receiver. But I do think adding a third wide receiver could help. They also, it is important as we get further away from the events to remember how we got here. By the end of the season, the Dolphins' offensive line was like a total mash unit. Like, guys were playing without practicing. At one point at the end of the season, in some of these must-win games, that Week 18 game against the Bills, their top six offensive linemen were out. I mean, how do you win football games? We basically saw it with the Giants all season. Like, if you start to lose key pieces of your offensive line and you're mixing and matching and the guys have no chemistry, they haven't played together, it is a huge mess. So maybe just with some health, we could see a real rebound for the Miami Dolphins. And I'm definitely with you on the Cowboys. Like, they are so talented. They kind of have all the pieces, but they, by the way, are another team that is in a real tough cap situation. And no one really cares that much about the NFL salary cap, but it does impact what these teams do in the offseason. I would honestly, like, I would be happy to see the Cowboys win the NFC and see Dak, you know, Dak played at an MVP level this most recent season. So we'll kind of see what happens there. If I had to pick one of these teams deep down the board, I mean, it would be the Packers for me. That would be the team that I think is most interesting heading into this offseason.
By the way, the graphic is up here if you're watching through the TV side on the down the board options here. The 30-1s to me, Davis, are really intriguing. You take a look at the Los Angeles Chargers. Harbaugh comes out of college from Michigan to now coach them. We'll see what that means for Justin Herbert. Maybe they get it a little bit more physical on that side of the football. And also the New York Jets coming back into the equation with Aaron Rodgers, hopefully fully healthy by the start of training camp and the way they go into their season. And then there's the Jacksonville Jaguars, who to me were a big disappointment this season under Trevor Lawrence. Of the 30-1 crew out there, the Chargers, Jets, and Jags, what are we looking at there, Davis?
This is the range where it's all hopium to me, right? Where you start just being like, we are on a wing and a prayer in this group of teams. And I think the name that most people would probably highlight would be the Jacksonville Jaguars. They win the playoff game against the Chargers last year, and they were very similar to the Dolphins, just a team that got so banged up. The AFC South in general is sort of interesting when you look at how the Jaguars built their team, where I think the Jaguars maybe just kind of thought like, oh, well, this is our division, right? You know, the Texans, they stink. They have to take a rookie quarterback. You know, the Colts, they stink. The Titans, they stink. And the Titans still kind of stink and are in a team in flux. But I don't think the Colts stink at all. Like, the Colts are going to be a fascinating team with Anthony Richardson. And if you had to weigh things on a scale right now, I think you definitely say the Texans are probably the best team in that division. I mean, you know, the AFC, it just keeps picking and handicapping AFC teams is so hard because the quarterbacking talent in that conference so outweighs what happens in the NFC. Like, all the best quarterbacks, like 8 of the 10 best quarterbacks in the entire league are all in one conference, and that just kind of makes the margins so thin. Like, the Seahawks can just feel fine about the direction they're in as a franchise right now because they, you know, who do they have? Who do they have to compete against? Like, the Seahawks could just end up being the third seed next year, like, pretty easily.
Let's keep it in the AFC here and talk about that North. The Cleveland Browns are a 45-1 price. Not necessarily saying like, okay, Chubb got injured. What's he going to be next year? The same thing with Deshaun Watson. But how about Deshaun Watson coming back into the fold, Davis, for the Cleveland Browns? Joe Flacco ended the season nicely. Now, granted, the way it finished in the playoffs, not so great here. But what are our expectations for the Cleveland Browns at 45-1 next year?
My expectations are that the offense is probably going to be pretty bad again. I just like we are pretty far removed from Deshaun Watson playing quarterback at an elite level. And there's no way for them as a franchise to go in a different direction at quarterback. They owe him way too much money. You can't cut him. No one's trading for him. Like, I don't know. I don't, maybe the Falcons would trade for him or something. Like now that he's on that cut, maybe they could get out of it, but they are going to go as far as Watson can take them. And they play in an insanely tough division. You know, they had to play against the Bengals and the Ravens. And even, you know, the Steelers, it's so funny. Like, we laugh at the Steelers and their offensive incompetence. But Mike Tomlin is such a good coach. That defense is stout enough. Like, probably the toughest division, actually, in the NFL. My expectations would be very, very low. I mean, I think the defense will continue to be amongst the best in the NFL. And I think they're going to struggle, you know, to get to 21 points most of the time. And that can be a formula, as we saw, that wins games in the regular season. The Browns can win 10, 11 games, but I don't know if their ceiling is any higher than that.
Always going to be hard to go against the Chiefs here. Certainly the NFC championship, the San Francisco 49ers, those question marks will be around, can they win the big game with Kyle Shanahan? But I'm very interested to see this offseason about that 12-1 price on the Buffalo Bills. Revamp that defense a little bit and get healthy. Maybe they can do some damage next year. The coach is coming up. We're going to get to the hardwood. Keep it right here on the grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Let's get after it here in the NBA. A lot of action going on last night on the hardwood. Also tonight as well. Davis Maddock, Donnie writes out as we welcome in the coach, Coach James Young. And also, he is our NBA expert, but also a dyed-in-the-wool New York Knicks fan. We watched last night the Knicks, now losers of 4 or 5 games. Maybe the toughest way that you can actually lose a ball game. Coach, I would have loved if we had a camera on you at the end of the Rockets-Knicks game. Please lay it out there for the people what happened.
Well, very simple. Jalen Green drives to the basket, offensive rebound late in the game, and he's the head official. They call a foul with 0.3 seconds left in a tie game. He makes 2 out of 3 free throws, and the game is decided there. And I think the thing people have to realize is, as a coach, there's a couple of things that you want. Number one, you want consistency, right? You want to be able, everything to be called down the middle, but there's always that wiggle room at the end of the game. So just to paint the picture, the rule states that you get the vertical play as an offensive player. If a defender comes into your space while the ball is in the air and until it hits the rim, you are considered to be in the act of shooting. Brunson does what's called a flyby, which is jump around to the side. You clearly see how they land. They call a foul. And it's an amazing thing. And Ed Malloy, who people talk about Scott Foster, he gets himself in enough mess over the years. He openly came out as the lead official at the end of the game, after the game, and said a foul should not have been called. At the end of the play, you let that game go to overtime. Let the players decide it, because the last thing you need is that to happen. But, of course, line moved from -4 all the way to +1. Houston still gets that cover by winning by 2.
Yeah, pretty brutal stuff there for the New York Knickerbockers who, they need the All-Star break. These dudes are tired. It's got to be very deflating for a game to end. And then for the referee after the game to immediately be like, yeah, you guys got jobbed, but there's nothing that we can do about it right now. Moving to the marquee game of the night, the Nuggets travel to play against the Bucks. They immediately lose Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Then Jamal Murray goes out in the second quarter. They're forced to play a ton of Peyton Watson and Reggie Jackson. They don't get there in the end. JY, let me ask you this. What did you see from the Bucks defense in this game? Because that's been the big concern with them. That's why they moved on from Adrian Griffin. That's hopefully what Doc Rivers is in there to fix. What did you make of this one?
Well, you take out the starting lineup for the NBA champions, you got a shot to win. I mean, that's what I took out of that. Listen, Doc's teams are always going to be good in the regular season. It's the playoffs that you worry about Doc, and Donnie can speak to this as a Sixers fan, his lack of adjustments in-game or game-to-game over a seven-game series tends to be his Achilles heel. So while it was a great performance and a great win, you tell me the fact that Jamal Murray and KCP played a combined 27 minutes, that's good. That's good for a Milwaukee team. It gives them a chance. I'm more concerned about when I see them, if they play a team like Denver in the NBA Finals, when they play a team like an Anthony Edwards on the 23rd, when they get Maxey on the 25th, when I start to see lead guards or two guards that are dynamic scorers, do they have the perimeter presence to go get the job done and get spots? I'm sorry. I love him as a player, and he drives people crazy. Patrick Beverley is not going to move the needle in regards to telling me that the defensive woes have been fixed by the Milwaukee Bucks. They still have problems on defense, and guys, it doesn't matter who they have in their lineup. That is not going to go away.
Take a look at the Milwaukee Bucks last night, obviously led by Giannis Antetokounmpo, and rightfully so, 36 points here in that big matchup against Nikola Jokic, who also went over his points prop here, Coach, getting to 29. Let me ask you this quick question, because the top three right now in the NBA awards market for MVP, two of the top three, obviously Jokic and Antetokounmpo, squeezed in the middle is SGA, who I know you love. But let's just focus on these two superstars, Nikola Jokic and Giannis Antetokounmpo. At the FanDuel Sportsbook right now, the favorite is Jokic, minus 140 price, Giannis plus 650. To win the MVP this season. Give me an idea how Giannis can maybe close that gap on Nikola Jokic here.
Well, it's just going to take a huge second half by Giannis for this to take place. And then if you start looking at it, a lot of it could come down to the standings. Now, obviously, Milwaukee is 6.5 games out of the one spot, so I don't think there's any chance of them getting passed by, or passing Boston. Maybe they find themselves as a solid two. That would be helpful. And then they would need Denver to slide, right? Denver is two games out of the loss column from Minnesota, and they're obviously four ahead of Phoenix, so, and four ahead of Sacramento. So if you get a slide by Denver, right, and then you turn around and you get a rise out of Milwaukee, say they get the two, then you can kind of start to look at that. And if you start thinking about, well, how does this line up and help maybe Milwaukee with someone like Giannis? How about Milwaukee's got the fourth toughest schedule according to Tankathon the rest of the year? So he's going to have opportunities in big games, two against Boston, one against Minnesota, two against OKC, two against the Clippers, two against the Sixers, one against the Knicks. You will see Giannis get plenty of opportunities, but Denver has the 23rd easiest, or should I say one of the easiest schedules, 23rd toughest in the NBA, highlighted by three games with Minnesota. So I think you need a big slide by Minnesota and then a big gain by Milwaukee. Guys, I just don't see it coming with the strength of schedule of these two teams.
Which I think is pretty fair, right? That's just you can only play who you have in front of you, and when you've got easier matchups, obviously it's easier to pile up those statistics. All right, one we talked about yesterday, the Philadelphia 76ers and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Me, you, and Zeno, we all said, look, that number is way too big. The Cavs are only favored by double digits over the dregs of the league, the Pistons, the Wizards, the Blazers, the Spurs, and they didn't even cover that many spreads here. They end up losing to a Joel Embiid and Nicholas Batum-less Philadelphia 76ers team. Buddy Hield leading the way with 24 points, 41 minutes for Kelly Oubre, 10 of 14 from the floor. I know that you are not a big Cleveland Cavaliers guy. What did you make of this one, JY?
I thought they were going to cover the spread. I'm stunned they won. But I will say this, okay? Some people call them fake, fugazis, da-dun-da-duns, whatever, frauds, whatever it is, that's what Cleveland is. Because here's what it comes down to. As great as Donovan Mitchell is, and he had 36 last night, as good as Dark Garland was with 21-9, here is the problem that you have with this team. Number one, they out-rebounded Philadelphia by one without Joel Embiid in the lineup. So that tells you they could get bully balled all over the place. That is a concern that I have with Cleveland. Number two is they don't have a defensive stopper. They have claimed and made Isaac Okoro to be this defensive stopper. He does not get the playing time, nor do I think he's good enough to stop elite guards. So you can get Maxey going off. You can get Buddy Hield. Folks, y'all have Buddy Hield at 8 assists last night? I mean, you want to talk about something that Coach didn't even see coming. I didn't know Buddy Hield could pass the ball 8 times in the game, let alone get 8 assists. But the perimeter defense of this team is poor, and I've said this ad nauseum. I do not believe that Jared Allen and Evan Mobley are going to work in the long term, because even though Evan Mobley hit a 3, neither one of them can step out on the floor. You can sink offensively, crowd the 3-point line, and you have 2 guys that are going to clog up the paint. They got problems in Cleveland, and if they don't fix it this year, I expect one of them, most likely Jared Allen, should get moved, put Evan Mobley at the center.
Coach, capping the Cavaliers here throughout the rest of the season. If we take a look at their NBA prices to win the championship, it's actually at 22-1. We also had some movement overnight here, +850 to now a 9-1 price here to win the Eastern Conference. They were the hottest team coming in to last night's action against the Philadelphia 76ers. But as you said, you don't believe in them on the long stretch. Talk to me about these numbers here. And is there any value on the Cavaliers moving forward at a 9-1 price to win the East and 22-1 to win the NBA championship?
No, no, absolutely not. Simple question, simple answer. Now, the thing is they showed what took place last year with the series against the Knicks when, you know, they just got bully balled, and I just think that's a concern. Here's the thing, folks. Cleveland got run out of the arena, or actually beat up, I would say, out of their own gym and lost 4-1 in New York. And there, and we talked about this yesterday with Davis, right? Who were their big acquisitions? Jordan's Niang and Max Strus. Like, those two are going to move the needle. If I'm JB Bickerstaff and you say, hey, these are the two guys that help you get to the final, I'm going to be like, where are they at? Because these two ain't getting the job done. It's just that simple. So Cleveland, no, I don't believe in the Cleveland Cavaliers. I think that they are not on the level of Milwaukee, of Philadelphia, of Boston, of New York. We'll see what happens with Jimmy Butler. Now he's away from the team. Possibly of Miami. So I think they're a good team. There's got to be changes made, which is one, break up Mobley and Allen, and possibly maybe break up Garland and Donovan Mitchell. 2 small guards. It just doesn't work.
Well, Donovan Mitchell might take care of that for them if rumors are to be believed. And I'm with you, but the thing about the breaking up of Mobley and Allen is that Mobley's got to get better on defense if you're going to make him a full-time center. That's what his calling card was heading into the league. He's really slipped on that end. Allen has not slipped at all. He's as good as he's ever been. Great rebounder, great defender. Just very hard to win when you are playing a guy who literally, the 2 guys who do not shoot 3-pointers. So let's go ahead and close with this one. Let's take a look at the Western Conference odds. The Nuggets still sitting at top. They are 2-1 to win the Western Conference. The Clippers are sitting there at, right behind them. Then the Suns, then the Timberwolves. And why are we disrespecting my Thunder? I mean, JY, what is this? 9-1, they're worse than the Timberwolves. They're worse than the Suns. No shot, man. They should be a third in these odds. I feel disrespected by this.
Well, it's a couple of things, Davis. One, they're going with the fact that they haven't been there yet, right? That is the key. But the other thing, folks, and this is where the markets are going to move every day. It's based on who plays who. So if you think about it, right, if you started the playoffs today, Oklahoma City is the 2 seed. They're going to get the 7 seed, which right now is either Sacramento or Dallas. Somehow they're going to put them not as a heavy favorite over either one of those 2 teams. Then you have to look at, they're going to get the winner of the Clippers and the Suns. So you could argue to me that 2 of the 3 or 3 of the 4 best teams in the Western Conference could all be on the other side of the bracket. That's why when you look at a team like Denver, even though they are the four seed, they are the favorites because they figure they get New Orleans round one, pick them off, then they go against Minnesota. Hasn't been there yet. It's almost like the battle of attrition. But you're right, Davis. You've got to believe in Oklahoma City Thunder, especially with Gordon Hayward as an adult in the room.
He's Coach JY, and we love having him on here, the early line, to talk a little NBA action. Big game tonight, Kings, Suns. We'll get Coach on, certainly. Much, much more here for us. But we're going to return. We got a great poll question next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Quick little segment here to end hour number two as we head into hour number three. Donnie Wrightside, Davis Maddock, the early line, getting down to the business here. And no bigger business than this. We always have a fade the public poll here at the end of hour number two. We set the table, and then the first segment of hour number three, we sort of explain ourselves here. But how about this poll from Sports Grid TV right here on X? Do you consider Oklahoma to be a part of the Midwest? Now, most people say, like, isn't this a sports show? What is this, a geography show? Are we playing Jeopardy here? No, we're not, because there is active behind the scenes and in front of the camera is what is actually defined of Midwest. Now, if we bring up that poll here and list the questions here, it's just a simple yes and no and nothing more than that. But the fact of the matter is it must be hot contention if Oklahoma is actually a part of the Midwest. And also, Ben Scott Stevens, who's usually on the show with me here, I know has some hot takes. It's great that he's going to have to be silent on this hot take until he comes back. But Davis, let me start here. Is this a burning question in the Midwest from Midwesterners that we get to decide, or should I say you get to decide, who is actually the Midwest?
Yes. Yeah, 100%. This is a real thing. If you have lived in the Midwest, if you've spent time here in what people from New York might call the flyover states, this is very real. And we take this very seriously. What I would say is, so I'm from Kansas, right? My dad's family is from Oklahoma. So I grew up growing in between the two states quite a bit. Real difference. There's a real difference in vibe between the two states. And I will lay this out. The United States Census Bureau, so the people who are in charge of calculating all this stuff, they do not consider Oklahoma to be the Midwest. The Midwest, as defined by this bureau, stretches from Ohio to Kansas, from Kansas to North Dakota. Oklahoma, not the Midwest.
Yeah, I'm going to give my, as an outsider, I feel the need to comment on this, which we will do in hour number three. It's a hot topic, people. Don't go anywhere. You know why? Hour number three is coming up next.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator. Roll with the sausage breakfast burrito. Buddy it up with a honey buddy. Or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes. And then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.